This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Iran's top diplomat blames the UN Human Rights Council for turning into an instrument of foreign policy by a number of countries led by the U.S. The Syrian president receives the Egyptian foreign minister in Damascus. He's the first diplomat from Egypt to visit Syria since the war began in the country in 2011. And the UN calls for $4.3 billion in aid to Yemen this year to help millions of people affected by years of the Saudi war. Hello and welcome live from Tehran. You've tuned to World News. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Iran's top diplomat blames the UN Human Rights Council for turning into an instrument of foreign policy by a number of countries led by the U.S. The Iranian foreign minister has slammed some Western countries for double standards regarding human rights. Hossein Amir Abdullahian was addressing the 52nd session of the Human Rights Council in Geneva. He blamed the council for turning into an instrument of foreign policy by a number of countries led by the U.S. The top diplomat underscored the genuine dialogue, constructive interaction, and respectful cooperation as the basis for promoting human rights. Amir Abdullahian also touched on the recent foreign-backed riots in Iran. He described a number of Persian-language U.S. and U.K.-based TV channels as promoters of violence. He said the Islamic Republic has always been at the forefront of countering terrorism in the region. Amir Abdullahian also reiterated Iran's commitment to safeguarding and promoting human rights, vowing that the administration will strongly defend the rights of the Iranian nation. Now, the anti-Iran Mujahideen Khalq organization has recently lost a legal battle against a German media outlet over an investigative report on the notorious groups using children as soldiers in the 1990s. Well, according to a statement by Zeit Publishing Group, a lawsuit filed by the MKO has been rejected by a German court. The lawsuit was submitted over an investigative report by Zeit magazine, which lays bare how the group, supported by German authorities, smuggled dozens of refugee children from Iraq and made them child soldiers. Well, the story originally published in October of 2021 revolves around Amin Golmariami, who went to Germany as a refugee child in the early 1980s. He was later forcibly taken to Iraq by the MKO to be recruited as a soldier. Now, the Egyptian foreign minister has met with the Syrian president, the first visit by a top Egyptian envoy to Damascus in more than 10 years. Sami Shoukry conveyed President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi's message of solidarity with Syria following a devastating earthquake that hit the country in early February. Shoukry also expressed Cairo's willingness to strengthen bilateral relations. He held discussions with his Syrian counterpart, Faisal Miqdad, as well. On Sunday, a delegation of Arab parliamentary leaders visited Damascus and met with the Syrian president. Well, the visits indicate the Arab country's willingness to restore normal ties with Syria, whose membership in the Arab League was suspended in 2011. Ahead of a UN-led donor conference on Yemen in Geneva, the world body has called for $4.3 billion in aid to the war-torn country in 2023. The UN says aid agencies require the money to help over 17 million Yemenis. The organization says the country is at the forefront of the climate crisis, with severe drought and flooding threatening lives. Meanwhile, UN Chief Antonio Guterres said that the international community has the power and the means to end the crisis in Yemen. Millions of Yemenis have been on the brink of famine and medical crises due to that Saudi-led blockade. Since 2015, the UN estimates that two-thirds of Yemen's population will require humanitarian aid and protection services this year. Well, France has strongly condemned a recent raid by Israeli settlers in the occupied West Bank, which left at least one Palestinian dead and several hundred others injured. The French Foreign Ministry called the violence against Palestinian civilians unacceptable. It also warned that the escalation could further get out of control. France has called on all parties to avoid fueling the violence and to come together to de-escalate the situation. The ministry also held Israel responsible for the attack, urging the regime to find the perpetrators. Israeli settlers and troops raided parts of the West Bank city of Nablus on Sunday, killing a Palestinian and injuring over 400 others. They also set fire to several homes and vehicles. The regime has intensified its deadly crackdown on Palestinians in the occupied territory since the formation of a far-right cabinet under Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. 66 Palestinians have been killed in the West Bank so far this year. Russia has accused the United States and other Western countries of disrupting its relations with Africa. Russia says the move by, quote, the collective West is aimed at isolating Moscow following what it calls its special military operation in Ukraine.
The U.S. desire to dominate the world by poking its nose into other countries' affairs, especially when things are not in its favor, is not hidden anymore. In the latest example, Russia has come out accusing Washington of attempting to disrupt its relations with nations on the African continent. Russia's Deputy Foreign Minister Mikhail Bogdanov said the United States and its allies are conducting an unprecedented campaign for Russia's political and economic isolation, including the disruption of the second Russia-Africa summit in St. Petersburg scheduled for July. Bogdanov said Western countries embarked on their collective campaign to isolate Russia in the international arena ever since the beginning of this special military operation in Ukraine. He noted that the West, in order to achieve its anti-Russia agenda, has significantly piled up pressure on African countries through threats of imposing sanctions, termination of financial and humanitarian aid. Bogdanov's assessment came more than a month after Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov visited South Africa as part of his African tour. During Lavrov's visit to Pretoria, which was the second since last year, the two sides pledged to boost bilateral ties. In a joint presser, top South African diplomat Naledi Pandor even lauded the growing economic partnership between the two countries, along with political, economic, social, defense, and security cooperation. Lavrov's successful visit to the continent and planned Russia-Africa summit and economic forum in July are testimonies that West, the U.S. in particular, have failed in their plots to isolate Russia internationally.
Well, the U.S.'s approach toward Russia comes at a time when millions of Africans appear to be fed up with Western presence on their soil. That can be highlighted in recent anti-West sentiments in such countries as Burkina Faso, where protesters demanded the immediate withdrawal of French forces. Now, with anger growing in Africa against the West, it seems that the era of Western colonialism is taking its last breaths.
The visit by the Russian diplomat to South Africa refurbished the common pursuit of the two countries for upholding world peace and security and promoting global development and prosperity. With South Africa hosting the Summit of Five Emerging Economies, commonly known as BRICS, this year, the ruling African National Congress has suggested that Pretoria could use the chairmanship to push for the admission of new members to expand the bloc and challenge a global arrogance. In the words of Pandor herself, the current global geopolitical tensions clearly signal the need to create institutional mechanisms that will have the stature from the global trust to promote and support global peace and security. BRICS should play a proactive role in emerging processes and ensure it is part of a redesigned global order. recent joint naval drills involving South Africa, Russia, and China, despite U.S. criticism, show these countries' resolve to stand against the global dominance of some powers. Pandor argued that hosting such maneuvers with what she called friends were part of the natural course of relations. Nevertheless, the popular resentment against the West, the U.S., the U.K., and France in particular, are on the rise due to their historic oppression on the continent. Anti-West sentiment could be clearly seen in nationwide protests in Burkina Faso, with demonstrators condemning former colonizer France while waving Russian flags. Growing dissatisfaction with France is largely visible in other former colonies across Africa, including Mali. At this moment, the unity is an anti-colonial power structure seemed to be of high urgency for African nations. A change from unipolar to multipolar arrangement is another need, especially for East African countries that are embroiled in power politics. These could uplift not only the continental stature, but a unified power to reckon with. However, this major paradigm shift can be duly achievable if countries across the African continent come together and stand firm against the West's imperialism.
Meanwhile, French President Emmanuel Macron is set to visit Africa this week as Paris attempts to restore its influence following a series of military and political setbacks. Macron's four-nation tour will take him to Gabon, Angola, Congo, and the Democratic Republic of Congo. The president is set to deliver a speech on his strategy to deepen the partnership with African countries ahead of his trip later on Monday. Well, this comes as anti-France sentiment is running high in some of France's former colonies in Africa. Last week, France withdrew its forces from Burkina Faso after its government ended an accord that allowed the French military presence. Now, Mali has also ended its military cooperation with France after 10 years, giving its place to Russian military contractors. Well, Britain and the European Union have reached an agreement over the post-Brexit trading arrangements in Northern Ireland. That's according to a British government source. Well, the deal seeks to resolve tensions caused by the 2020 post-Brexit arrangements governing Northern Ireland and its open border with EU member Ireland. As part of the Brexit agreement, Britain signed an accord with Brussels known as the Northern Ireland Protocol to avoid imposing checks along its border with Ireland. But the protocol effectively created a border for some goods moving from Britain because it kept Northern Ireland in the EU's single market for goods. Now, the new agreement is expected to ease physical checks on goods flowing from Britain to Northern Ireland. Well, let's stay in the UK now, where Britain's major supermarkets have been called in by the government to discuss the country's shortage. That's into the third week. Now, the food and farming minister will meet bosses of Britain's major grocers later today. Several supermarket groups have imposed customer purchase limits on tomatoes, cucumbers, and peppers. That's after supplies across the supermarket sector were hit by disrupted harvests in southern Europe and northern Africa due to unseasonable weather. Now, the crisis has been exacerbated by less winter production in greenhouses in Britain and the Netherlands because of high energy costs. And now to Peru, where protests sparked by the removal of President Pedro Castillo continue after nearly 3 months. A new poll finds that most Peruvians believe that what took place was a coup carried out by Congress against the elected president. Camila Escalante reports from the Peruvian town of Desaguadero.
The indefinite strike, which began nationwide on January 4th in protest at the Dina Boluarte administration, remained strong in the southern regions of Peru, with major road closures in several provinces, according to the Ground Transport Authority. Nearly all of the civilians that have been reported killed since the December 7th ouster of President Castillo lost their lives in anti-government protests in this part of the country. A newly released Ipsos poll finds that nationally, 51% of Peruvians believe that Pedro Castillo was ousted in a parliamentary coup, a number which surges to 69% in rural areas like here in the Puno region. A preliminary report released this week by the International Human Rights and Solidarity Mission outlines numerous human rights abuses, and calls for an investigation of the Peruvian state for crimes against humanity for its excessive use of force against a defenseless civilian population and using lethal weapons.
Around the country, the popular call continues to be the demand for the resignation of Dina Boluarte, as well as immediate presidential elections. Camila Escalante, Desaguadero.
And with that brings us to the end of this Worldless edition right here. Thanks so much for staying tuned.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
The ocean of dua.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Hello everyone, brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. During this month of Sha'ban, the month of Almighty Allah's mercy and pleasure, we will try to offer a glance into some of the passages of the whispered prayer of Sha'baniya, or the so-called Munajat Sha'baniya. Thank you in advance for staying with us. We'll be back again after listening to some parts of it.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. إلهي لم يكن لي حول فأنتقل به عن معصيتك إلا في وقت أيقظتني لمحبتك وكما أردت أن أكون كنت فشكرتك بإدخالي في كرمك ولتطهير قلبي من أوساخ الغفلة عنك.
Brothers and sisters, as you were previously with us, we have reached this excerpt of the whispered prayer of Sha'baniya. إلهي لم يكن لي حول فأنتقل به عن معصيتك إلا في وقت أيقظتني لمحبتك. My Lord, I had no strength to desist from your disobedience. إلا في وقت, except when you أيقظتني لمحبتك, when you awaken me for your grace, because of your grace. So this part is mainly talking about Almighty Allah's grace and favor, which is one of the most important issues reflected in the traditions and in the verses of the Holy Quran, have in the shape and form of loving the Almighty Allah. The Almighty Allah is the one who loves His servants, and He loves the servants when they love Him as well. And this loving the Almighty Allah is itself one of the graces, blessings, and favors of the Almighty Allah. Now, in the Holy Quran, as we were talking about in the previous episode, in the Holy Quran, what has been negated is loving other things than the Almighty Allah when they are not in line of loving the Almighty Allah. But whenever those things are loved because of the Almighty Allah, these things are not reproached. This kind of love is even recommended, because life would have been so full of ignorance, and it would be insipid and blank and colorless without this kind of love. This kind of attraction is the thing that Almighty Allah has created. It is one of the creations of the Almighty Allah on this universe. And the Almighty Allah has put it there for the people, for men, to put it to good use and to reach His love in the path of making a relation with the Almighty Allah to reach salvation. So this love must be duly noted.
Alhamdulillah, we have been given the blessed opportunity of witnessing another month of Sha'ban, which is the month of Allah's mercy and pleasure. حَفَفْتَهُ بِالرَّحْمَةِ وَالرَّضْوَانِ. Allah has covered this month with His pleasure and mercy. I thought it might be good to have a little introduction to Munajat al-Sha'baniyya. The late Imam Khomeini, in many places, on several occasions, emphasized on this Munajat. And in one of his sayings, he said that there are many important mystical points that one can understand from the Quran and whispered prayers of Imams. And then in particular, he mentioned Munajat al-Sha'baniyya, and he said philosophers, mystics may be able to understand some aspects of these whispered prayers. But if someone wants to really understand, must be a person who has himself achieved a high level of closeness to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, so that he can have a taste, he can have an experience of what he says. In another place, the late Imam Khomeini said something very important. He said, this Munajat al-Sha'baniyya is one of the whispered prayers that if someone pays attention to it and follows it and reflects on it, he can reach somewhere. He can achieve some levels of perfection. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to forgive us in this month of forgiveness and to be pleased with us in this month of pleasure. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to bless us, our families, our community, all humanity with His pleasure, with His reward, with the coming of Imam Mahdi ajjalallahu ta'ala farajahu sharif, with forgiveness, with being able to remain always on the right path.
So, as we were discussing in the previous episode, we said that in the Holy Quran, we have different elements that, based on which, we have to make our relation with the Almighty Allah. Some elements like Raja, Khawf, Tadhallu, Khushu', Tadhallul, and Hub are mentioned in the Holy Quran. And this Hub is what we will be discussing. But this is not the only thing that our relations with the Almighty Allah should be based on. This relation should be based on many things like hub, khawf, raja, fear, hope, humility, dedication to Him, returning to Him, intimacy with Him, pleading for His forgiveness, which is istighfar, seeking protection from Him, beseeching His mercy, and total absorption in the Almighty Allah, which is inqita' ilallah. Also, other elements are mentioned, like craving for Him, raghbatullah, praising Him, hamd, obedience to Him, which is ta'a, true servanthood, ubudiyyah, and His remembrance, which has been reflected in many traditions, His dhikr, neediness to Him and understanding that we are in need of Him, which is faqr, and holding fast to him. Imam Ali ibn al-Husayn, Zainul Abidin alayhi salam, says in a supplication, O Allah, I ask you to fill my heart with the love of you, awe of you, belief in you, faith in you, fear of you, and yearning toward you. So, a harmonious spectrum for establishing a relation with Allah is constituted of these various elements that we mentioned. Each of these elements must be considered a key to a door of Almighty Allah's mercy and recognition and ma'rifah. For instance, beseeching Him for His mercy is the key to His mercy, as is pleading Him for His forgiveness. And moreover, each of these elements is in itself to be regarded as a path leading toward Allah. So one's yearning for Him, love for Him, and intimacy with Him is a path which leads one to Allah. Fear and awe of Him is another path leading to Him. Humility toward Him and khushu' is yet a third kind of path to Him. Entertaining a hope in Almighty Allah and invoking Him, subhanahu wa ta'ala, is also another path arriving at Him. So accordingly, one wayfarer should make his way to Allah through different paths. He should not confine himself to one single path. And this is because each of these mentioned paths have their own kind of aroma. They have different kinds of tastes, and they give you, and they all result in different kinds of perfections, and they have different fruits, and the true wayfarer needs different kinds of fruits, different kinds of power, different kinds of elements for perfection in the way of reaching the true ma'rifah and recognition of the Almighty Allah. We will elaborate more, God willing, in the next episode. Thank you for staying with us. Wassalamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
شعبان بجمالك جلالك زهوبان والعالم يقول لك احبك يا شعبان شعبان بجمالك جلالك زهوبان شعبان بجمالك جلالك زهوبان والعالم يقول لك احبك يا شعبان والعالم يقول لك احبك شعبان بجمالك شعبان شعبان يا شعبان يا شعبان يا شعبان احبك يا شعبان يا شعبان احبك يا شعبان
economic divide
Iran's President Ibrahim Raisi in China, welcomed warmly, to say the least, by the Chinese President Xi Jinping, who rolled out the red carpet for Iran. Why is Iran important to China in the first place? Well, the Western media tried to put down this visit and play it down, but that wasn't the case. Hi, I'm Kavitar Voyi, and this is Economic Divide. Some of the highlights of this program coming up. First, Raisi in China, we're looking at 20 cooperation agreements that were signed. Also, operationalize a 25-year partnership agreement that's at the core of this relationship. Xi Jinping hailing Iran's solidarity during complex world situation. Another reason for the union of these two countries, U.S. sanctions, and ways to neutralize these sanctions is, of course, one of the goals. And also, other sanction-hit countries are uniting with China against the West, and particularly the U.S. This means pivot to the East is in order. Another thing that's in order, sorry for the pun, a new world order comprising of Iran and Russia getting closer to China. Also, trade without a dollar is another goal, and this leaves the U.S. and the West alienated. First state visit by an Iranian president to China in more than 20 years, greeted by the Chinese President Xi Jinping on a red carpet, an extraordinary display of camaraderie between the presidents of the two countries. Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi said both governments have shown a will to enhance bilateral cooperation, despite opposition from their adversaries. Called for bigger steps to implement the 25-year cooperation agreement, saying this will contribute to peace and stability in the region and beyond.
We believe that implementing the 25-year cooperation agreement and realizing what agreed between the two countries' officials today to develop bilateral ties can promote regional and global peace and stability. Certainly, relations between Iran and China will not be affected by international developments, since we're determined to develop ties with China in any circumstances.
President Xi Jinping, for his part, said that Beijing would develop friendly cooperation with Iran no matter how international and regional situations change. Iran and China finalized the 25-year agreement back in 2021. The agreement will see China invest $400 billion into various fields of Iran's economy, including its oil, gas, and petrochemical industries. Part of the agreement is reviving the Chinese One Belt, One Road initiative, which will see China's investment in global infrastructure in more than 150 countries and international organizations. Iran, with its strategic, geopolitical, and geographical location, is also a key part of that massive project. Time now to review some social media posts on this historic visit by the Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi to China. First up, President Xi Jinping. He held talks with President Ebrahim Raisi on his state visit to China. No matter how the international and regional situation evolves, China will unswervingly develop friendly cooperation with Iran. Next, new axis of powers, Iran, Russia, and China. That's something for the U.S. to think about, obviously. Then this post, Xi and Raisi signed 20 agreements on various sectors, including trade, technology, infrastructure, agriculture. China and Iran already have a 25-year strategic partnership deal. De-dollarization is also a big part of this oil for yuan. Then Iran's presence, Raisi, in China consolidating what's called an axis. U.S. sanctions system is almost obsolete now as the Islamic Republic's back is covered by the Chinese economy. The Obama-Biden geopolitics with Iran have failed. Iran is part of a super Asian axis. This particular viewer seems to think so. We wasted time. All right, that was a snippet of some of the viewer comments on this topic. Let me introduce our guest for this segment of our Q&A. Ahmad Saleh joins us. He's a political and economic analyst. Ahmad Saleh, welcome to Economic Divide. We're taking a look at this visit. Obviously, it's a historic visit, unless you listen to some of the Western media that downplayed the significance of this visit. But why do you think relationship has been forged and has reached a level that it did, as evident from this visit? Because we're looking at what lies at the core of this, which is that 25-year comprehensive agreement that the two countries signed, which brings about a general question, and it's a simple one. Why is Iran important to China, do you think?
When Iran is a member of SCO, the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, after 20 years of bureaucracy and waiting, it has, I think, a very clear message for the decision makers over Atlantic and even in Europe, because SCO is more a security organization. Taking into account that there was a publication in 2013 by a U.S. Council Intelligence, a think tank based in Washington, and the name of the publication was Global Trend 2030. So, National Intelligence Council. And this think tank is among those top-ranking think tanks in the United States. One of the mega trends in that publication, a 170-page one publication in 2013, was that actually in 2030 it was a perspective of the world. How will the world look like in 2030? One of the mega trends was that U.S. will not be a hegemonic power, and power will shift to networks and coalitions in a multipolar world. And now, after 8 years, after 9 years, we are witnessing that this prediction has come true.
All right, that's a good point that he raises there in terms of the type of countries that have actually forged relationship where they can, accelerate to what our guest there, Ahmad Saleh, said. Inar Tangen joins us. He's a senior fellow of the Tahe Institute. He's the founder and chairman of China City's Blue Book Consulting, who joins us now to see whether he agrees with Ahmad Saleh. Inar Tangen, welcome to Economic Divide. Our guest there talks about how there is this unity that's happening between countries that kind of goes against the Western state of orders. But in terms of the way that Iran fits in with China, when we want to take a look at the relationship that they have forged. Obviously, there are lots of pluses for each country that it serves the other country's interest, but it comes also as a bulwark against the West, perhaps. Maybe you can define this relationship a little bit more for us.
Well, all countries are important to China, quite frankly. I mean, China's deals in trade and not politics. So, but there's a tremendous amount of sympathy for Iran because of the same issues that are facing China in terms of the sanctions from the United States in particular. And also because the U.S. unilateral withdrawal from the JCPOA. I think from China's perspective, if you're going to have an international rule of law, there has to be some ability to count on countries following through with promises they made, whether it's the JCPOA or whether it's the Paris Climate Accord or the Kyoto Climate Accord or many other treaties and understandings that were entered into by the United States.
Time now for the InfoNews section of the program. We pick four items for you to review. Let's get started. First up, we're going to take a look at poverty in the United States. The numbers are pretty shocking, but it's been that way for a while, in which about 37 million people are classified as being poor. Now, what's new about this report is it says 3.4 million more people are living in poverty for the year 2022 than for the year 2021. So that figure, 37, is an increase that's included with the 3 million people. So it used to be roughly around 34 million people. Now, next up, not really that new, but the Saudi membership to the BRICS nation is something that's noteworthy because that will elevate the BRICS membership, obviously, to a higher level because they are keen. The kingdom is keen to join BRICS. And also, SCO, the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, Moscow's ambassador to the kingdom, has said that Riyadh is looking to diversify its foreign policy. Quick reminder over here, Algeria, Argentina, and Iran also have asked to join BRICS. So you can see that this grouping of countries is becoming quite relevant. Now, this piece of news we picked because it's important based on the earthquakes that happened in Turkey, but in particular in Syria, the U.S. sanctions on that country. Well, Syria has lost, first of all, anywhere from $70 billion to $100 billion in oil revenues. Now, aside from that, you have things like electricity rationing happening in that country, where it has reached its highest level. Some areas only have 1 hour of electricity. You should just imagine how they are dealing with that in this time where the earthquake has made things just that much more worse. And there have been calls, growing calls, for the sanctions to be lifted, especially the Caesar sanctions. And our final item, European job losses, it's something that's continuing. It's a developing story almost, but it's important. In this case, Ford has slashed thousands of jobs in Europe as it is eyeing electric future. Job losses over the next 3 years, they're going to include some 2,300 positions in Germany and also 1,300 in the UK. Both countries are suffering from somewhat of an economic crisis, which this adds to it. Those were the four topics that we picked.
You're listening to Economic Divide. The series looks at the financial health of the economies around the world and its impact on countries. You can listen to Economic Divide on Mondays and Tuesdays on IRIB English Radio.
The in-depth section of this program is upon us, and our focus, China's Belt and Road Initiative. We're going to take a look at this initiative in the context of Iran and West Asia. Now, 2023 marks the 10-year anniversary of China's Belt and Road Initiative, the world's largest and most comprehensive trading network. First, as of August of 2022, you have 149 countries so far around the world that have signed up to work with China. Together, these countries account for up to 40% of the global GDP at a whopping $21 trillion U.S. dollars. Now, the goals of this massive project are actually quite simple. Increase trade amongst the member countries, reduce trading costs, and also to work together to grow the global trade. Okay? Now, it's worth looking at the Belt and Road Project's span geographically and in that respect where Iran stands in this mega project. Iran, Turkey, and then to Europe, and of course parts of West Asia along with Africa is where the maritime route takes this. In terms of this project, the mega aspect of it, and in terms of the cities that's going to be impacted, all across these routes is how that's going to happen. And of course, Iran's geographic location at the center of this project and its accessibility from four different directions to different areas of the world. But there's a much bigger goal that needs to be met, and that is what China's Belt and Road Initiative is doing. It concerns the needs of developing nations. This is why it's important. Developing nations, they need $40 trillion. That map was developing nations. Belt and Road Initiative is comprised of that. $40 trillion by the year 2035 to help them with infrastructure needs, which will in turn help with their economy and with their trade. Okay? So that's very important. Now, why did China zoom in on these developed nations? Well, this fact is an eye-opener, but this is the reason. 85% of the world population lives in these four regions, namely Africa, Asia, West Asia, and Latin America. However, this 85% of the world population and that geographic area receives only 15% of the attention. Okay? Obviously, it shows the amount of potential there is there for trade. Next, how can these countries then get there? Because it's not just about the money that's needed for investment. Well, China's investment in countries that are major oil and gas producers is one of the main pillars of the Belt and Road Initiative. And in that respect, that's why Iran is a good fit in this project, because it is a major oil and gas producer. Now, mind you, there are other countries that are also major oil and gas producers, like Saudi Arabia. All right? Let's find out what our guest thinks. Inar Tangen rejoins us. He's a political analyst, a geopolitical analyst, in order to shed his thoughts on this. Inar Tangen, welcome back. When you take a look at the Belt and Road Project, as I just covered it, it is something that is major in terms of the span, the geographic span that it covers. At the same time, you have countries that are part of this, either the land route or the maritime route. But in the bigger picture of things, how is this project important, especially when it comes to countering the West or the U.S. In terms of how they are excluded from it?
As you know, many countries feel that the hegemony of the U.S. is slowly declining, in part from its own actions. But you can divide this up. Basically, the global South and Central Asia, Russia, parts of the Middle East, obviously part of the global South, they are moving away from the U.S.-led order. You can see that quite plainly in the U.N. votes that are being recorded. Increasingly, it's not running towards Russia or China. It is simply not agreeing with the U.S., whether it's sanctions on Ukraine or the U.S. position that it is above the law when it comes to the ICC or any other kind of trade or political agreements. So it, unfortunately, is a time of turmoil where countries are trying to figure out how they're going to fit into this multipolar reality while the U.S. continues to cling to this idea that it should maintain hegemony in the interest of American exceptionalism. There's a lot of restiveness about the U.S. weaponizing the SWIFT banking system, which had been initially set up. It was promised that it would never be weaponized by one country, especially the U.S., in terms of its economic interests. Obviously, that has changed, and the U.S. has done that. Therefore, most countries are looking for alternatives to the economic domination of the U.S. dollar.
All right, that was Einar Tangen. We're going to have Hamad Saleh rejoin us here to get his take on this, to find out what he has to say, especially regarding what Einar Tangen there said. Well, Mr. Saleh, welcome back to our program. I mean, we just had our guest there talk about a new world order. And I'd like to find out what you think about the way that Iran fits into that when it comes to an economic powerhouse like China, in terms of fitting into an equation that runs counter to what the U.S. has done, being a hegemon. And of course, we're looking at different areas, such as moving away from the dollar being one of those ways that the U.S. and China, I'm sorry, that China and Iran equate with each other. We should put Russia in there. Can you tell us a little bit more about this new world order that's taking shape?
As I said, after 2008 and all of those printed money out of thin air by Federal Reserve, I think Chinese made the historic decision to not play on the same field, because they already knew that they will be the loser, because the Americans created $1.25 trillion base money out of thin air in one single year, and they started to interfere in the market, purchase or direct asset purchase. They just purchased the share of private entities, which we know that according to the capitalism, it is a red line. I mean, this amount or this volume of interference of the government into the free market is or has been the red line for the past 80 years, but they crossed it in a very, very significant volume. So that was a turning point, 2008, for the Chinese. So they decided to change the playground and to bring a new financial system, but very steadily in a Chinese form. So they started to accumulate gold, as the Russian also did during the past 20 years. And then in 2008 and 2009, the Chinese started to create currency swap agreements with many or several central banks in the world.
Tehran-Beijing cooperation has only been growing over the past couple of years. China has now become Iran's largest trading partner, with figures showing volume of trade between the two to have risen by over 40% in the previous Iranian calendar year, which ended on March 20. China's President Xi Jinping visited Saudi Arabia late last year in a bid to expand its influence in the South Asia region. The visit was received positively by Saudi Arabia. Beijing and Riyadh have agreed to do their oil trades in China's yuan in a shift away from the dollar, something which sanctioned-hit countries like Iran, Russia, and China are also doing. The expansion of economic and trade ties between China and Iran, especially in the face of U.S. sanctions, can significantly boost the joint effort to counter U.S. hegemonic ambitions in the West Asia region.
The Iran-China relationship is just one of the fronts that Iran enhanced to increase its trade volume, and this is defined in the Iran-China 25-year comprehensive agreement. This was signed last year and includes economic, military, and security cooperation. The agreement will look for China to invest $400 billion and to increase bilateral trade tenfold to $600 billion in the next decade. Another move by Iran, which was finalized last year, was Iran's membership at the SCO, the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. The population of the SCO member countries combined is 3.33 billion, or 42.49% of the world's population. The combined GDP of the eight member states is $23 trillion, or 24.2% of the global GDP. Acceptance of Iran as a full member of SCO will open up a new horizon of multilateralism. It will be beneficial not only for Iran, but for the whole region. Another massive agreement that Iran has signed is with Russia, the 20-year comprehensive partnership agreement. Tehran intends to increase its trade volume with Russia to $25 billion. In addition to its economic potential, Iran views the 20-year agreement as a way to solidify its security cooperation with Russia and secure new arms deals like the purchase of Russian-made Sukhoi 35 fighter jets. Iran has also shown interest in the Eurasian Economic Union, which has Russia as one of its founding members. This is an integrated single market of 184 million people and the gross domestic product of over $1.9 trillion, in which Iran has created a free trade zone between the Union. And finally, Iran has applied to another bloc that includes China and Russia, and that is the BRICS group of nations. BRICS is an important grouping bringing together the major emerging economies from the world, comprising of 41% of the world population, having 24% of the world GDP and over 16% share in the world trade. BRICS countries have been the main engines of global economic growth over the years. That does it for this Quick Take segment.
It was the in-depth section of this program, which did not leave much for saying after that presentation. The U.S. and its allies, but more so the U.S., is trying to disrupt the world order by targeting China and its Belt and Road Initiative. When 85% of the world lives in Africa, Asia, West Asia, and Latin America, but receives only 15% of the attention, and when China is trying to advance a project to help the needs of these countries, what's so wrong with that? And Iran is there to be the engine of growth by providing it with oil and gas for all these projects. That is how Iran's relationship with China can be defined. That does it for this edition of the program. Really enjoyed having you with us. From Mikhail Tavoy and the team, it's goodbye until the next Economic Divide.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. shortwave, 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.